This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, Lovelings! It's me! Olivia Kennedy! But you can call me Liv. And I am joined today by...
Jeremy Cobb, but Scott Helzer or Heelzer or Holzer. I apologize. It's an O-E in the last name. That has a lot of sounds in English. But Scott calls me your friendly Mazeberhood Dungeon Master.
Oh my god!
This is the wrong dungeon and the wrong dragon.
Full prince vibe? Woof!
This makes them even more black!
Cake, liches, and pitches.
And lands in the cusp of a teaspoon.
Oh, no.
On a nat 20.
No!
You think this is just a game?
That's disgusting, and I love it.
Yeah! We're about to get into something real big now.
Which I think the maze may be a reference to corn. Like corn mazes. Like M-A-I-Z-E.
Okay.
So I'm guessing like... Yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering if you did
corn
like
corn mazes are big in Ohio.
Like corn mazing,
that's where I'm going with.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, and also cob, of course, corn on the cob.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah, maze, yeah. Oh, maze as in is it maze with an I? Is that
M-A-I-Z.
Yeah. We figured it out. Thank you so much. That was a great one. Thank you. It was a thinker.
You were smarter than us, Scott.
Yeah.
Good job.
Thank you, Scott, for challenging our brains and getting them working before we dive into a fun, complicated topic.
Yes. Before we do that, I just want to compliment you, Liv, on one of the best hellos we've had. I think you've gone higher than anyone has.
Oh, thank you.
And you completely followed through.
I know.
I thought it was wonderful.
I was like, don't give up on your dreams, Olivia. Just keep going, even if it hurts. And here we are. So I'm getting there. I'm getting better. I'm slowly working my way up the food chain. And Jasper, better watch out, you know? You better watch out.
I think the next step is to try and take the beginning of the hello even lower. And so that we've reached maybe upper limits of the high, maybe like lower the low so we can get an even a broader, like an even bigger
full
slide.
Upswing. Yeah, absolutely. And then the step after that is to like wait until Jasper starts to say the hello. And then I completely cut him off extremely rudely. And I just do it. And he's like, Olivia, and I'm like, sorry, everyone demanded it. By everyone, I mean Jeremy. So,
yes,
yeah,
I'm the audience member in this call.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. No one else. It's fine. Yeah, but Jeremy, what are we talking about today? What's happening? What is this?
I think we're talking about a few things here. One of which is we just wanted to touch briefly on it's current events. Look, a lot of it's current events and not just, let's talk about the current events, but what they mean for the TTRPG industry, especially the fandom creator relationship as it exists online, but also like what kinds of positions people are being put in here. I think on both sides. The first of which was one that I think we would be remiss not to comment on at least a little bit, which is Wizards of the Coast actually hiring the Pinkerton Agency to go to a fan's house and retrieve cards from this fan, cards that the fan had bought that Wizards of the Coast had sold them by mistake. These cards had not been officially released. The fan went online, I think saw them and was like, oh, this is great, purchased them. This is Wizards of the Coast's fault that this was listed. And then the fan got the cards, I think then made a YouTube video like being like, hey, doing like an unboxing of the cards. And then the Pinkertons showed up at his house and said, we're going to need to take those back.
Okay, let's start this for anyone who doesn't know who the Pinkertons are. So they market themselves as a detective agency right now, but there's a lot of history there, a lot of history that was to do with not being great towards a bunch of different people.
I can actually give a short history of the Pinkertons. I did some research on them a couple years ago. So I can't remember. I think it was Alan Pinkerton was the original patriarch of the Pinkerton family, who came to prominence as personal security for Abraham Lincoln.
Wow, okay.
Allegedly, the Pinkertons foiled an assassination attempt on him, I think around 1860, like early 1860s. Okay. And then they became actual spies for the Union Army during the Civil War.
Wow.
Yeah, they worked closely with Abraham Lincoln. They were his personal security. That didn't work out too well in the end, but...
No, it didn't.
I
was thinking, immediately when you were like, oh, they were Lincoln's security, I was like, good job.
well Look, done. They made it to 65, at least.
I guess.
They got him into the second term. but they were going on like espionage missions, I believe, for the Union. Mm-hmm. They then, after the Civil War, were extremely prominent. As Liv was saying, they became most well known as strike breakers. Mm-hmm. They would be, because they are a for hire law enforcement agency, the people who hire them are usually rich, and they will often use them to. They used to, at least, and possibly still do, hire them to engage in intimidation, often violent tactics, often including like murder against poor people, often people who were striking.
Yeah,
they would break strikes both figuratively and literally. They at one point had more operatives as part of their force than the entire U.S. standing army. I think that was in the 1890s. Mm-hmm. That was how big they were. I know the state of Ohio had banned them because they were afraid of what would happen if the Pinkertons ever attempted like a violent insurrection, because there were just so many of them and they were so frightening. They actually are the originator of the term private eye. That's right. Private eye does not come from private investigator. It actually refers to the Pinkerton logo, which is an eye with the words "We never sleep" underneath it.
Oh my god.
they are like the boogeymen of the 1800s, the late 1800s. They are, if you ever watch Deadwood, whenever the Pinkertons get mentioned on that show, even the toughest people are like, oh no. Mm. Like immediately, like, oh no, we don't want the Pinkertons involved.
Oh, no.
There was a whole disaster where they tried to break a strike and they encountered armed resistance. They tried to violently break a strike and encountered armed resistance from the strikers, and multiple people were killed, and that kind of ruined their reputation because it was so public. And they never quite bounced back, and I believe there were laws passed as well that sort of regulated them more, but essentially they still exist. They are not nearly as prominent as they used to be, but my understanding is they're not really a better company.
No, I mean, what I'm seeing, obviously, okay, so this is from Wikipedia, so it can't be completely trusted because anyone can add anything they want. But what I'm seeing for the modern era of what they've done is that in 2020, they were hired by Amazon, allegedly, don't know if this is completely true, to spy on warehouse workers for signs of union activity. And then it was revealed in 2022 that Starbucks had hired a former Pinkerton employee as a part of their union busting efforts. That would make sense for both of those franchises, to be honest. They're still on their shit. They're still on their bullshit, it would seem. And now they're back in the limelight again because of this whole thing. What? I just don't understand. Okay, number one, why would you hire anyone offensive, you know, like that would strike on the offensive, to go to someone's house to get some fucking cards And I say
it's one pack too.
It's a pack. I say this as I'm quite a fan of Magic the Gathering. I've gotten into it recently, and I'm really enjoying it. And I've been excited for this new pack, for this new deck set to drop. That's what they're called. But it's mm-hmm. it's a pack of fucking cards, mate. Like, come on, let's not. And then also with everything that's gone on recently with Wizards, it's like why. Why? Is this a part of like a viral marketing campaign? Is it working? I don't know. I don't think it is.
On behalf of like awful. By Paizo.
Yeah.
Against Wizards.
Yeah, maybe. Paizo have gone undercover. It's not Pinkertons, it's actually Paizo. They're playing like double bluff. I'm kidding, obviously. But and then also the fact that they would go with, they could send anyone over to get the cards. Why the Pinkertons? Why? I don't know.
Why would they not just send the dude like a why not a lawyer?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Why not send him a letter or an email or something saying, hey, we sent you those by mistake. Mm-hmm. We will give you like the cards we had originally wanted to give you, or you'd originally wanted. You know, in exchange, could you please send those back? Or maybe we'll send you a free set along with the cards you originally wanted. Yeah. Just like, there's no, to my knowledge, there is no evidence of prior communication in which they tried avenues like that.
I don't think
And
so.
The guy was like, no. Even so, I don't know why you escalate to the Pinkertons.
Yeah, exactly.
That's like,
it's such a what?
It's a pack of cards.
It's such a buck wild move. I cannot get my head around it. Like, what? Why would that be the first option that came to your mind? Why?
Well, apparently, I don't remember if it was in Linda Codega's article, because I remember Linda Codega jumped on this mm-hmm. and had like what I recall being quite a good article talking about how allegedly this is not the first time mm-hmm. they have done something like this. This is just the first time it got public. But I also heard that at least one, possibly more than one, high-ranking Wizards executives used to be involved with the Pinkertons in some capacity or other.
Okay, I could believe that, yeah. So they were like, I know someone. And I feel like, okay, is this another instance of, like, Wizards of the Coast allowing one group of people to be in charge of a thing and leaving them unattended? Is that what's happened? I'm just literally trying to come up with any kind of rationalization.
I'm going to see if I can find Linda Codega's article. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. So Magic, the headline is Magic, quote unquote, raid mm-hmm. wasn't the first time Wizards of the Coast hired Pinkertons. Okay. This has been updated, including an expanded statement from Wizards of the Coast. So let's see. Okay. So the YouTuber was old school MTG, and he somehow acquired a selection of boosters and showed them on his YouTube channel,
yeah.
resulting in the reveal about 75% of the limited release set. Within a week, Pinkerton agents knocked on his door and demanded he turn over all the cards from the unreleased set. He'd released videos on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. The agents arrived on Saturday morning. According to Wizards of the Coast, the company sent an investigator, quote, as part of an investigation into the unauthorized distribution and disclosure of embargoed product, and only after, quote, several phone calls went unanswered, unquote. Mm-hmm. The investigator, the company says, visited him and this is a quote again, visited him and asked that he reach out to us as part of our investigation and returned the embargoed product and packaging. He agreed to do both. We are replacing all the unreleased product with the product that he intended to purchase, end quote. So it seems like he tried to purchase something. They accidentally sent him the wrong thing.
Yeah.
And then after he posted videos about it, they tried to call, allegedly.
Okay.
It sounds like it's when they say unanswered, that implies to me that they didn't pick up the phone.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like they were sending him. Yeah, I don't know. That also is like, OK, mm-hmm. so he didn't know you wanted them back. Maybe I don't really know.
Yeah.
Cannon says, quote, as soon as my wife answered the door, they aggressively asked for me by full name, announced themselves as the Pinkerton agency, which I'm very familiar with the reputation, and said they were there to recover, quote, stolen goods, After his wife asked them to wait outside, Cannon says that they, quote, forced themselves, end quote, at least partially through the door and prevented her from closing the door all the way.
Terrifying.
When Cannon eventually got to the door, he says he, quote, assertively moved everyone outside and told the agents they needed to treat the Cannons with more respect. That last part was assertively moved everyone outside was part of the quote. The last part was not. Then back into quotes, they did eventually dial it back and become more civil after that. At some point, Cannon alleges, the treatment by the agents made his wife cry.
I'm just trying to imagine that happening to you on a Saturday morning after you're like, ooh, got a fresh pack of magic cards, a fresh new set. That's so exciting. And then these guys just fucking rock up. I don't know. It's just unbelievable. Yeah, and you might be thinking, gang, why are you talking about this now when it's been a thing for a few weeks now? But, you know, we haven't discussed it with you, basically. And we also just wanted to just remark upon how absurd and unacceptable it is. It's just unacceptable, especially content creators.
It really is.
Yeah, content creators are the lifeblood of everything Wizards puts out. And they keep fucking us. And I've been swearing a lot in this episode, but I'm just real mad about it.
Yeah. They keep fucking
us. Fuck it out.
Don't fuck me, bro.
Fuck with me.
I did want to add, because there's a little bit more to the story.
Yeah.
Wizards of the Coast does argue, like they strongly refute this depiction of events, which contradicts both the report from the investigation as well as the conversation between the individual and Wizards of the Coast representative after the interaction in question, end quote. The company also stated that, quote, under no circumstances would we instruct any employee or contracted agency to intimidate an individual, end quote. So Wizards disputes it, refutes it. I don't know that they were there. It sounds like what they heard were reports from the agents in question, as well as apparently there was a conversation between Cannon and a representative from the company. I don't know. According to Cannon, he said that, let me see. Okay, according to Cannon, the agents continued to claim that he was in possession of stolen property and said that if Cannon didn't hand over the product immediately, they would escalate the situation to the local law enforcement. Quote, they claimed copyright infringement and said I would face between 1 and 10 years in jail.
Jesus.
And said that allegedly threatened that this incident could result in, quote, up to $200,000 in fines plus all legal fees.
That's
quote.
So the idea that somebody could be charged for legally buying a product and they would send it legally. And then that's mad. That's insane.
It's insane. Yeah. And I did see on here that he claims that if they had he claims that they didn't call him. Let me see if I can find the exact quote.
I'm looking through an article on
a simple
yes.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. A simple email or phone call from Wizards of the Coast and I would have a simple email or phone call from Wizards of the Coast and I would have cooperated. Cannon says there was absolutely no need to send such a notorious agency to my house to frighten my wife and threaten us. The final two things. This alleged incident with Cannon isn't the first time the Pinkertons have been dispatched to retrieve Magic the Gathering cards. Sources who were unwilling to share their names for fear of retribution by Wizards of the Coast told IO9 that back in 2017, Pinkerton employees were sent out to investigate the theft of an uncut sheet of foil cards from the then upcoming major expansion, Ixalan. The Ixalan foil sheet has become something of a legend in modern Magic spaces, and while the original response from Wizards of the Coast is currently unavailable on their site, an archived version exists. So if you go and check out the Gizmodo article by Linda Codega about this, you can see links to both of those things. So that's the first thing that we, and apparently they were, the company was transparent about the illegal nature of the theft. And Scott Kelly, who was in 2017 the vice president, creative and production studios, stated in the post that in order to retrieve the stolen property, Wizards of the Coast worked, quote, with a number of groups and individuals, including private investigators, investigators who specialize in supply chains, cybersecurity experts, and local law enforcement, end quote.
I just don't when you think about it for even a moment, do they not think of these? Do they not see things from a human lens?
Are there not other private investigators?
Yeah.
Are there not
any
like
other private investigators? It's baffling, but yeah.
And the final thing, I mentioned that they may have had some connections in terms of personnel. Mm-hmm. So Robert M. Klimek, mm-hmm. who has been the director security risk management at Hasbro Incorporated for 12 years, was previously the director of supply chain security practice at Pinkerton Consulting and Investigations.
Wow. That's...
The current manager of global investigations is also a former Pinkerton agent.
What is happening? What's happening? Jeremy, this is wild. I can't. Make no bones about it, folks. This is wrong. It's weird. It's disgusting. It's not a fan. I'm very mad. so mad.
Yeah. Look, there's no. My understanding is that there was no attempt to violate this man or his person or his wife.
Yeah.
In any way, like they were not, to my knowledge, attacked or threatened. Mm-hmm. Well, beyond the legal action that was allegedly threatened, but still, like that, what a company to try and associate. Like, why for Wizards to associate themselves specifically with the Pinkertons? I don't know. Yeah, it's like a weird. It's somehow they found a new level.
Mm. Yeah, no, exactly that. It's like, what could we do? What could we possibly do to make ourselves look worse in the public eye? What if we were to take the villains from Red Dead Redemption 2 and we send them to the person's house? Yeehaw! What if we did that? What if we did that?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Well, and also, I think it... As somebody who is just like a fan of Dungeons and Dragons, like I enjoy the game. Yeah. It's still probably my favorite TTRPG system to play.
Very good.
Yeah, it's not the only one, and other ones are great, and some of them have advantages and disadvantages over this
one. Some of them we might be playing soon on the chat, on the podcast. You should.
Very true. Play. Yes, some of them we will continue to play and show more things. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's just like it gets really weird. It does. It puts I don't know how fans feel about this sort of thing, because my understanding is for the people who are plugged into these whole situations, which I know probably the majority of the fandom just doesn't hear about it, doesn't really care, doesn't hear about it. But for those who do hear about these things, surely that has to cast a pall over a lot of their home games.
Yeah, I mean. For me, even like, because I same as you, still really enjoy the game, but like every time I play it, there's a little bit of ick there, you know, just a little bit of, and it's such a shame that it has to put a damper on like a game that I really enjoy playing with friends, and it just feels like. Maybe it's just because I'm a creature of habit, but you're like, oh, if I play another TTRPG in the place of this, it's not going to feel like this. It's the same, you know, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But with that being said, I know some friends of mine who have switched over to Pathfinder because they were just like, nah, completely out. They're having a great time. They're having a wonderful, wonderful time. And I think, you know, like, look, it's completely valid. Chase your happiness.
Yeah.
Don't it's difficult because I don't want to be like ignore what's happening, because don't ignore what's happening, but you know, I don't know, it's difficult.
I think it's important to be aware of who it is you're financially supporting.
Very true. Yes. Yeah.
Like if you want to keep buying a lot of Wizards of the Coast products and so forth, but I think it's helpful to know what the company you are buying from has done in the past.
Yeah.
And continues to do.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
It does. It also creates a weird situation for creators.
Yes.
Because again, most fans probably don't hear about this stuff, probably do not hear these sorts of things. Mm. And a lot of the ones who do hear about it don't really care, which, okay, that's how they're engaging with it. That's fine. But I don't, like, as a creator, if it's like, a lot of creators have to kind of be plugged into this thing. And I think most creators do kind of feel some type of way about it. But then there is often a lot of pressure, I think, that creators feel to play D&D, either because it's the main game they know how to play and they're nervous about trying out a new system publicly, or because there's just seemingly not as much audience for a lot of other games.
Yeah, it is the whole thing of, like, when we were discussing it, well, before all of this happened on Dicebreaker, when we were like, gonna make a new TTRPG series, should it be D&D? And it's like, it's, you're constantly torn between, like, well, it's, the market's oversaturated for sure, very much oversaturated, but also it seems to just be all people listen to, like, all people consume, you know, and it is a shame. Yeah, I do think it's a shame, but yeah.
It's sort of like, I think watching actual play shows is sort of like a combination of watching sports and watching theater. And when watching sports, it really helps to know the rules.
Yes.
I think to engage with a lot of sports.
Yeah, sure.
If you know the rules and what really is going on like the micro level in these games, I think they become so much more fascinating.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
And if there's something to be said for the fact that I think more people know how to play D&D than know how to play a lot of other systems.
Yeah.
And you can learn from watching a show a lot of how to play a system. I certainly learned a lot of how to play D&D just from watching, like, Dimension 20.
Same with me in Critical Role. Yeah, that's how I learned.
Yeah. But it's not like it can be a big ask for to try and get people into something like that when they don't. Yeah, when they're not as familiar with it. And not only that, but there's also something to be said for, like, resistance to learning other systems from a lot of people. Mm-hmm. It's usually people who only know how to play D&D, I've observed, that don't want to learn how to play other systems.
Because they're comfortable, and you're comfortable with what you know. And that's completely valid as well, because, like, you know, we have a lot going on, and learning a new system can be daunting, for sure. So that does make sense. Yeah.
Yeah, we've said, I think Jasper specifically has expressed multiple times on this show that in the past he had been somewhat reluctant or hesitant to try and learn new systems because he thought, like, well, this is probably going to take a lot of time and I've gotten good at this game. Why do I now have to spend all this time to try and get good at another game? And part of that, actually, I think, is a little bit of a lack of experience. I experienced that thought process as well, which, when I say lack of experience, when you start playing other systems, one thing that you tend to learn is that most systems, most TTRPG systems, are actually much simpler than D&D is.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So it's easier to pick them up.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I think, yeah, you can definitely get into your head about it. Like, when I'm currently trying to learn as much about Cyberpunk Red specifically as possible. I have, like, GM'd a session of it and had a really good time, honestly. Like, I will geek out about Cyberpunk Red if you let me, but, like, just
please do.
I mean, so we the kind of moral ramifications that are presented in Cyberpunk Red are so fun to play with, and I feel like you don't really get that in D&D as much. It's like it's less of, like, how are we going to surmount this obstacle that is a physical monster, and more like, this mega corporation has created a sentient AI. Do we, like, just sell this AI to the highest bidder, or do we acknowledge that it is sentient and has feelings? Like, you know, it's like it's like the moral quandary. And it was so fascinating watching, like, my players just, like, go back and forth on this, and, like, just, like, rounding out the session with my partner Chloe was playing a character who was given, like, the AI. Like, the AI was like, okay, I'll let you take me, and then another person was, like, a corpo, which is, like, a corporate stooge kind of person, and they immediately pulled out a gun, like, give me that, I need that, I'm gonna make loads of money with that, you know. And it's like immediate PvP, like, it was just like, oh my god, you know, like, it
that sounds sick.
It was so good. Like, I can't wait to do another one, but, like, it just it was so exciting to just be like, I have not seen this happen before in roleplay. This is amazing, you know? Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Really, really cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I think there's something to be said, and this is something I've been talking about with, in terms of the philosophy of a game and how, like, for example, I do, there's a series that there's a setting I made, and then we've used it for the City of the Black Rose series, where it's drawing from the noir genre, yeah. One of the primary genres. And one of the things about noir is that it is a pessimistic genre. Sort of one of the hallmarks is that it is pessimistic. You don't get clean wins in the noir genre. Mm-hmm. At best, you get a win and a loss.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's like, or a win, but the win barely mattered.
Yeah.
And that's not D&D.
No.
D&D is a power fantasy game that is about getting powerful enough to enact real change and change the world and become a god in your own way.
Yeah. And superheroes.
That's, yeah. And exactly. And that's just not there's a question of like, how compatible is that? Mm-hmm. Now, granted, I enjoy playing in that setting using D&D because I enjoy the combat system and I enjoy the colorful array of characters and the fantasy flavor that it brings. I think that's really cool and fun.
Yeah.
But I also recognize that philosophically, the way that the game is designed, it does not lead you towards a noir story typically. Mm-hmm. Just like Cyberpunk, the way that game is designed leads you towards certain moral quandaries and larger sci-fi-ish questions and like questions of corruption and corporate greed and also personal modification. Yeah. And there's
and
also questions of
to that personal modification. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And whether you like lose yourself, whether you like you get better. Mm-hmm. Maybe this is the only I know in the show Cyberpunk Edgerunners.
Yes. Amazing show.
Very good show. Dark and sad. So don't watch it if you're not prepared for that. And also violent.
Yeah.
But it's very cool.
Yeah, no, it's super cool. Yeah. No, just go into it with like a, ooh, I need to be prepared for this. Like, yeah, I tie that show specifically to just the emotion of heartbreak. That is it, the show in a nutshell. But yes, it's good though.
And that I think falls, cyberpunk has such strong ties to the noir genre that the whole idea of like telling a story that is tragic and there are elements of futility and fatalist elements where it's like, no matter what you did, you're already inside of this system and there's nothing you can do to get ahead.
Yeah. Like, both instances of other media apart from the tabletop RPG. RPGs, I guess, for Cyberpunk. I'm not going to give any major spoilers for either, but they are the anime and the video game. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Both of them are the most like death's coming. Get over it. You know, like here, you know, like just kind of like nihilism at its kind of like finest. You know, just like, well, this is the way things are. Things are shit. And there's nothing you can do to change that. Yeah, it's like, yeah, futility, I think, was the word you mentioned. Like, it's like...
Yeah, fatalism.
Yeah, like, in D&D, you are going to be able to, like, rise up through the ranks and, like, you can take on gods and demons. But in Cyberpunk, it's like, no matter how big you get, no matter how big of a legend you are in Night City, none of it matters. So there. Mm. Oh, it's fun. It doesn't sound fun, but it's really fun, gang. Ooh.
Yeah, and made by a black guy.
Yes,
Mike Pondsmith.
Mike Pondsmith and Cody Pondsmith, his son. Yeah, good. It's so cool. When I discovered that the creator of Cyberpunk was a black man, I was like, oh my god. Thank you.
Yes.
Good shit.
One of us.
We did it.
Yes. You did it for all of us, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
But like, without focusing in too strongly on just the topic of TTRPGs, the TTRPG drama, what I'm interested in is, because I don't want it to just be like, oh, here we go again.
Yes.
Complaining about wizards. Mm-hmm. I think what is interesting here is talking about, on like a larger scale, what happens when you have what happens when you have something that people feel that they want to engage with or feel even motivated to engage with, mm-hmm. but has strong ethical concerns based on who made it. Mm-hmm. As I'm saying this, the game that comes to mind is... which to me actually seems like a pretty cut and dried situation. Yeah. Maybe it seems more cut and dried than D&D.
Yeah.
Like, to me.
It gets me every time though, because it's just like, yeah, don't play the game. Don't do it.
Don't do it.
Like, no matter what you.
In fact, honestly, I'm going to go ahead and say, Dan, bleep out the name of the game.
Yeah.
And just know that it's a game that involves broomsticks. you know what we're talking about.
The game with Quidditch, yes. No,
yes. It's the boy who turfed.
Oh, God.
I don't want to give this game any more.
No.
Like any advertisement.
No.
What I find interesting, though, mm-hmm. is I actually just recently watched a really good video by Stephanie Sterling.
Ooh.
Who, if you're not familiar, she has a popular video game show called the Gymquisition, mm-hmm. and she is trans, mm-hmm. she's been about this video game commentary analysis mm-hmm. stuff for years and years and years. She used to be on The Escapist, etc. Mm-hmm. Openly was like, look, if you play this game, you're not an ally.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, plain and simple. I'm not trans myself, mm-hmm. but I mean, based on what she was saying, I sound pretty legit to me.
Yeah.
I agree with what she's saying.
It's just like, yeah, if somebody who is trans is saying this is going to affect me negatively, and even if they haven't said that, you can figure that out yourself. You know, you could figure out how to be an ally, and it's to not play the game. Mm-hmm. And I think I saw like a really cool TikTok video where like somebody was like debunking like when I think it was like a trans person had been like, oh well, I don't care, like, oh, it's completely fine by me, and then they were like, okay, but you this isn't about you, because like it's specifically you know, the TERF who will not be named is specifically going after femme trans people, and so if you're saying it doesn't matter to me, it's like, okay, cool, it's not about you, like you are not going through mm-hmm. what femme trans people are going through, and so you have to, yeah, none of us can accurately feel what it feels like to be in this situation, and so just, yeah, like just mm-hmm. just if somebody's telling you, just don't do the thing. I don't know, it's silly.
Listen to them, yes. and listen to what they're saying.
Yes.
And I think that it's very, like, there are so many resources, not only Stephanie Sterling's video mm-hmm. on the subject, Jessie Gender, mm-hmm. a really good YouTuber that I like. She has made multiple videos yes. on the topic. I think ContraPoints made a video or two.
I think she made one all recently, of them going yes.
in, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All of them going in detail mm-hmm. as to why this is materially harmful. Mm-hmm. Like one thing after another after another. It's honestly, I would say, even if you are already being like, I refuse to play this mm-hmm. game, I do recommend watching yes. some of their videos, in part just to give them the exposure.
Yeah,
but also
trans
like
creators do it.
Yeah. But also there's more info than there. I had not realized mm-hmm. like until I watched one of Jessie Gender's videos mm-hmm. Specifically on the subject that had quotes from some of the UK anti-trans activists. I had not realized how like I knew it was bad,
yeah.
but I didn't realize like it was vile, like extreme sort of stuff,
yeah,
where it's like, holy crap,
like, oh, when the like, dark ages again,
no
wow
idea.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like, it was stuff where it's like, oh, this seems like the things they're saying to them saying this seems like it's borderline illegal.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It should be, at
Absolutely
least.
Should
this
be.
Is wild.
I mean, trans people everywhere, but I obviously, as somebody who lives in the UK, fucking mm-hmm. shit show here for trans pals. I cannot imagine.
Yeah.
It's hellish.
This HeadGum podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt. Mm-hmm. So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective, unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
So that's a situation where there's clear material yes. harm that is being done to a marginalized community by engaging with a work. Mm-hmm. What about something like D&D?
Yes.
Is it the same situation where by engaging with this, are we doing material harm to a group of people?
That is the question. So the harm to the group of people, who would this group of people be? In the scenario.
That's what I'm trying to think. Yeah. I'm guessing, when I think about it, I'm thinking maybe creators of other systems.
Mm.
Like, surely the biggest issue here is the monopoly.
And I will caveat this by saying we are obviously not comparing the experiences of trans people to, like, the experience of content creators with, like, Wizards of the Coast. Incomparable right. completely.
Yeah, we're trying to look at it more yeah. as, like, if we remove the specifics and just say this is a work yes. that has been published that is harming people. Consumption of this work has clear harm mm-hmm. Towards a marginalized community. Mm-hmm. Is that also the case with this game, mm-hmm. or is it more just you are supporting a corrupt business?
I think it's more the latter of you are supporting a corrupt business, because annoying as it is, we're all kind of grouped together in their, you know, in the harm that they're doing. You know, it's not directed at a certain group in particular, you know, that we're all in the same boat, really. Like, and also in terms of age, race, gender, but also in terms of content creators and fans, and yeah, like we're all getting grouped together and getting fucked. Basically.
Yeah. Although there are arguments that I've heard from people that because of D&D's history, and I don't know enough about Magic to comment on that game, but it wouldn't surprise me if they had a history as well. Mm. But the history of, especially in earlier editions, sexism, full on misogyny, racism has been an issue throughout.
Yep.
That's kind of what led to this show being made.
Yeah, true.
And they are still struggling with this. They're trying to improve, but at their pace. Mm-hmm. Is that not harm? Mm-hmm. The fact that they are publishing stuff that helps reinforce sexist or racist ideology, even subtly, is that not then material harm?
Yeah. I mean, the whole sexism stuff, it never goes away. It happened, and we should remember it happened. I mean, it still is happening. It never completely goes away. Like, I still get people. So I made a video comparing the different editions of D&D. Number one, they do not like seeing a woman of color tell them about the different editions of D&D. People don't love to see it. I love to do it, but still.
And you should.
Thank you.
You have every right.
Thank you so much. But it gives me a little bit of pleasure to be like, I'm exactly what, you know, the original creators did not want playing the game. So that's great. But the amount of people, because I made a little dig. It was very gentle, a very gentle little dig during that video. That was just like, you know, shut up, Gary Gygax, or something like that. Mm-hmm. And people get mad about it. They're like, why are you saying that about Gary? Oh my God, what? No, you know, what's he ever done to you? Blah, blah. It's like, he hates me. Like, what are you talking about? Like, what are you talking about? He does not like me. He's made it clear. Like,
that he does not have. Yeah, a lot of the things he said are very clear on, like, not having respect for women. The game itself clearly is not considerate towards minorities. Ooh. Has some very backwards ideas about gender and sex and race and all those things.
Yeah. I'm literally typing into my computer, why was Gary Gygax bad?
Oh my goodness. That may return some spicy articles.
Oh no.
I think it's a valid question to say. I don't know though that it makes, that it completely works for me, that argument, because I feel like to some extent, then you could say that about a lot of things.
Sure.
Some of which maybe, some of which were even made with good intentions. Mm-hmm. And so there's also the question of like, do we take the intention, do the intentions change things? For example, Uncle Tom's Cabin, a book published, I believe, in 1853 by Harriet Beecher Stowe, a very famous book in American history, very influential book in American history. Okay. Most people, I think, are familiar with it just because they've heard of it. Mm-hmm. And then they're mostly familiar with it through the racial epithet, Uncle Tom, which is often levied by black people against black people who are basically being overly subservient to whiteness.
I have heard of this.
And are participating in white supremacy by sort of aligning themselves with whiteness and selling out other black people. Mm-hmm. That's what the term has kind of come to mean. Mm-hmm. At the time, though, Uncle Tom's Cabin was an abolitionist book. Harriet Beecher Stowe was a staunch abolitionist, and the book was trying to show the horrors of slavery. Mm-hmm. And Uncle Tom was meant to be, in the book, he is a slave, and he was meant to be just a really kind-hearted, pure-hearted guy who did nothing but, quote-unquote, the right thing, and still was horribly treated and ultimately murdered, I believe, at the end of at the end of the story.
I seem to show that no matter what you do, it's still gonna fuck
exactly.
you over. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Now, there's no question that that book has a lot of aspects that really have not aged well on multiple levels.
Sure.
Harriet Beecher Stowe was also a white woman, so there's also that. She's not, from what I can tell, writing from experience. I believe she's from Ohio. Mm-hmm. So she might have glimpsed, she might have seen plantations in her time. Mm-hmm. I know they had them in Kentucky. Kentucky had slavery. But I don't know how much direct contact she'd had with black people, black experiences. From all intents and purposes, from all appearances, I think she was just a white woman who hated slavery and was trying to help convince people not to support it anymore,
which at the time was huge, probably.
It was that book was so seismic when it came out that years later when Abraham Lincoln met her, he said, so you're the little woman who wrote the book that started this great war. That was during the Civil War. It was a massive cultural landmark at the time, and did a lot of good ultimately. But I think we could argue that it is, it also helped to unintentionally has helped to establish or perpetuate various racist ideas about black people, yeah. both in terms of its depiction of Uncle Tom, in its depiction of the young girl Topsy, who's a character. If you ever saw, saw Lovecraft Country, did you ever see Lovecraft Country?
No, I haven't actually. No.
Okay, there's an episode where one of the characters is being chased by these apparitions of these little girls that are dancing, and it's probably one of the scariest things in the whole series, if not the scariest thing. But those girls are like I think they're based on Topsy.
Okay,
like their appearance is based on Topsy.
What is it again? Something country. What was it called? I'm Googling.
Lovecraft Country.
Yeah, I don't know if it's my brain like willing me to just forget about Lovecraft completely. I can never remember his name, never ever. And I think that is kind of funny. So yeah, little girls
valid
dancing.
yeah, you'll see what I'm talking about. For those of you who have seen it, then you'll know. For those of you who haven't, if you want to, you can look it up. But be warned, it is scary. They are very scary little apparition girls.
No.
Liv is watching it now.
It's
legitimately scary, right?
Oh, that's a lot. That is a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they are obviously more monstrous than the way that Topsy is depicted, but the hair, the dress, the way they move is very much in like a Topsy sort of style. She's a character from Uncle Tom's Cabin. Now, do we then say, I think it's fair to criticize Uncle Tom's Cabin for its shortcomings, but do we then say like it should not be read, it should not be talked about, etc. We should not buy copies of it. Is that what that means? Because it has, in some ways, caused harm over the years?
That's true. It's interesting hearing, you know, all the different arguments for it. I love thinking about things from, like various different angles. Like, even if it goes against what I personally believe, I still want to hear, you know, what people have to say. So... What do you think? What do you think, Jeremy? What's your stance on all of this? Because I'm thinking.
Yeah.
So you make a very good point. So
while you're thinking, I'll say this. I don't think that Uncle Tom's...
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think the Uncle Tom's Cabin comparison is necessarily perfect because you could argue that whatever harm that it has done is largely in the past. Mm-hmm. Very few people read it anymore. Mm-hmm. Whereas whatever... Wizards of the Coast or other corrupt organizations, such as we mentioned Starbucks and Amazon having hired the Pinkertons, what they are doing is still very much in the present. If we're comparing Wizards of the Coast to Amazon, I think Amazon is clearly the worst company. Yeah. They're, it seems, much more actively exploiting and harming people.
Not letting them take pee breaks, etc. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Both in the United States and beyond. I think Apple, you could point to with the working conditions and their overseas manufacturing plants. I don't know that there's
one answer
comparing those to the people that make a card game and you know and a board game is quite equivalent.
Yeah, for sure.
But my position is this. I think that they are I think that the corporation is bad, as pretty much any corporation could be bad or could be considered bad. I think that they are actively doing things that are like, what on earth? And it makes me not want to associate with them beyond. And that's the weird thing is also like, I know people or have met people who either do or have worked for them.
I was going to say, and they're lovely.
Yeah, that's what's wild about it is like there are people in there who would, and I bet if you asked them, they would be like, yeah, I'm totally against that.
Yeah.
But they're not in a position of power to be able to affect things.
Yeah, I can think of at least like, I don't know, four people in Wizards who kind of heard about the Pinkerton thing and were like, what? You fucking did what?
Yeah, we were on Dragon Talk.
Yeah.
Like I was on there twice. You know, we've spoken to people from the company usually in much more amicable terms than we did with Kyle. But even still, we didn't come away from that hating Kyle.
No, not at all. Yeah, I don't know. I don't even think we've actually discussed that interview. Well, have we discussed that interview? But
We talked about it like afterwards, okay. How we felt about it, that right. we'd felt frustrated because we felt he was dodging a lot of the questions and we were having difficulty pinning him down and so on but, and so forth.
Yeah. Right. Coming at it from now. Yeah. No, we didn't hate Kyle whatsoever. Like Kyle had been sent out to do a job and was honestly landed with a terrible job to do. Like I wouldn't have wanted to be in his position, you know? Mm. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I think my answer is I'm still trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
Because it's like we weren't going to just talk about originally when we talked about this episode, mm-hmm. we were not going to just talk about this issue, but we were going to talk about the other thing, which I guess we'll have to talk about more down the line, which is not only do we have who do you support as a creator? I will tell you this. I am actively pursuing means of having us not use D&D for a lot of our actual play shows, including some of the ones that we're continuing down the line. Mm-hmm. We're looking for possible other avenues there for other systems that might work for some of those games. Mm-hmm. But that's what I'm looking for. But there's also the issue of like, the as much as the creators are trying to figure things out, mm-hmm. I think a lot of the fandom, at least the online fandom, has already kind of made their decision, mm-hmm. and are often it's part of what we were going to talk about was the growing divide between creators, mm-hmm. and fans, and the audience, and how there seems to be like a perception on one side from the fan. I think a lot of the creators see that the fans as being they don't understand the position that creators are in. They are angry. They are having misplaced aggression towards the real people who are behind all of this and are instead aiming it at the creators.
Which in the fans' defense is like they have no access to the actual like corporation mm-hmm. who's doing all these things. The closest thing that they have are the creators. But once again, the creators are just people and they shouldn't be taught. It's a whole thing. Yeah, we would.
Yes, and I think among the fans, there's a perception that creators are sellouts, that they are elitist, and that they are that many of them are trying to hold on to their positions in this hierarchy of like, oh, if the more popular you are, the more connected you are, the more you try to defend your internet famous friends, and the more you try to like jump on the bandwagon and sell out your own values that you claim to profess in order to try and defend people or ideas or whatever. I think there's validity possibly to both sides of that argument.
Yeah. Especially considering like there are some creators who are definitely who have faults and some who straight up should not be allowed to be content creators. You know, like there have been many instances where, you know, people have been rightfully cancelled for the stuff that they have done, but then like there's also like when does that go a step too far? When is it just kind of targeting people on hearsay? You know, like when, I don't know, it's difficult.
Yeah, we'll have to talk about a lot of it is like these. My feelings are still settling on this. And I don't think we should talk about this topic for a while. Just
no,
we've been talking about it a lot. This has been a drama filled first half of the year.
Yeah, it really has. It really has. Like, it's so mad to me that it's just like we're supposed to be sitting around and like playing characters and rolling dice, and this is all happening. It's very silly.
This is a made up pretend game, and we're sitting here talking about like, like really intense, and it's not even in game. These are not. We're not talking about the stuff like in the. We're not talking about corporate greed and all these things in the game itself. We're just sitting here talking about how by playing this game, are we aiding white supremacy? It's just like damn.
Literally, I don't know what point we were talking about cyberpunk, but there's some allegory there for what we've been discussing in the latter half of the episode. You know, like when does corporate greed go too far, and when are corporations like when because there's a thing there have been corporate wars in cyberpunk. I don't know if people don't know much about cyberpunk lore. Instead of like wars between countries, there are wars between corporations because they're basically the biggest entities in the world. And it's just like, you know, like when you think about that and when you think about corporations sending out, you know, the Pinkertons, it's just, there's a lot of comparisons there, you know? It's just, it's,
yeah.
Interesting. It's interesting.
Yeah. I'm so glad you got to talk about cyberpunk a little bit on the show. We got to play it sometime.
Okay. Don't quote. Well, you can't quote me on this because I don't know when it will happen, but I want to GM Cyberpunk Red for some of us here on 3BH.
Yeah.
I think it would be a lot of fun. And it's fun. It's a fun time.
Great. I'm super in favor of this.
Yes.
You heard it here first, folks. Coming at some point this year. But yeah, I've been looking into Cyberpunk Red as well for projects down the line, non-3BH stuff. And I think I would love for you to GM. Like, absolutely. I'd love to get to play the game. Yeah. It's such a cool idea.
Yeah.
Not perfect. Nothing's perfect. No. And even ideologically, I know that the game got criticized for issues of Orientalism that are a problem throughout the cyberpunk genre, actually.
Yeah,
This gives me an opportunity because I think we're going to need to end this video. I'm going to transition from this to suggesting that you guys from if you're interested in hearing more about cyberpunk as a genre, at specifically in regards to Orientalism, I suggest go checking out my other show, The Quantum Reactor, where we will have just released a review of the movie Blade Runner. But before that, we will have released an episode in which Andrew and I interview James Mendez Hodes. That's right. The man is back. And we talk to him about the issue of techno-orientalism throughout science fiction, but especially in Blade Runner and other cyberpunk works. Go check that out.
It's weird.
It's a great discussion.
Yeah, no, I imagine it's a great discussion. Very cool. Yeah, like.
Yeah, I highly recommend it. James is incredibly knowledgeable. He's just a great dude. He's helped us out on 3BH a number of occasions. He's made he in terms of talk show appearances may have appeared more than any other guest.
Ooh. Because
he's been on three times as like a talk show guest.
Wow. Okay. Cool. I mean, look, just very knowledgeable person, very good to have him on the show. I can see why that's a thing. Yeah.
And he's also worked as a sensitivity consultant for, we've hired him a few times for some of our actual play series.
Yeah.
He's the bomb.com.
I love that. Sorry, I was just thinking about the fact that, like, if 3BH does it, why can't other people do it? You know, you know, but enough of that nonsense. Jeremy, where can people find you? Tell us more about your podcast. Tell us everything.
Yes, you can find me on Twitter at Jeremy Cobb 1. That's Cobb with 2 B's, the number 1. You can find me on Instagram at The Cobb Meister. But you can find The Quantum Reactor, which is a sci-fi movie review podcast that I do with Andrew Coons, who has also been on 3BH before. Very nice guy. He is the DM for the show, The First Watch. I think Jasper and Unati and I have all guested on The First Watch at various points. And I think both Jasper and I played characters in his series. Oh, what is the name of it? I'm going to look this up. I'm going to find it. Yeah. Edit out the dead air here, Daniel.
Edit it out, please, Daniel. I mean, while you're looking for that, I can tell you that you can find 3BH in various places on the internet. Twitter is number 3, Black Halflings. That's us over on Twitter, and probably Instagram. But honestly, number 3, Black Halflings, in most places except for a little place called Patreon, where you can find us under TB Halflings, patreon.com/TB Halflings. There's lots of cool stuff going on over there. We're making some changes soon, so you might have noticed Jasper's not here. Jasper's off in LA.
That's not
currently
one of the changes.
No, that's not the change. That's not the change. Yeah, we've done it, guys. We listened to what you said. Jasper's got nowhere. Absolutely not. We miss him, and we can't wait until he comes back. He's currently off in LA. Just honestly crushing it. Like, just very proud, very proud halflings here. But yeah, no, we're going to be getting together and look at the Patreon, and we're going to be like, what can we offer to everyone? And if you have any suggestions, if you're like, ooh, I'd love to see this on Patreon, why don't you go ahead and join the Discord? Which there should be a link for, I assume.
I think we include the link to the Discord in every episode.
Yeah, check out the show info, and if not, hassle us on Twitter and we'll get you the Discord link. But yeah, if you're like, I'd love to see this on the Patreon, let us know, and I love to hear what people think. I want to know what you want, because it's just a great way to do things. Jeremy, have you found what you're looking for?
No, I can't find it anywhere. But instead, it was good. Whatever I did, it was whatever I was on. It's a really good show that Andrew would have. He would have people on. He plays an innkeeper at an inn that exists in a spot where people from other worlds will show up. And this innkeeper is just a really nice guy and will engage in conversations with the various guests. And they're not even really D&D games. It's just role play conversations where someone will come in playing a character and have just a really cool conversation with him. I was on that and it was so much fun. Andrew's great. But anyway, The Quantum Reactor is a sci-fi movie review podcast by Andrew Coons and myself. The premise is that we are on a space station sitting on the edge of an event horizon, which is the outer edge of a black hole, who are, for whatever reason, reviewing science fiction movies. And whenever we start saying too many spoilers, an alarm goes off, the spoilerometer goes off, and we have to enter the spoiler chamber.
Every time
there are sound effects,
chamber,
by the way, for all of this. There are sound effects. Good. There's a soundscape. It is, technically speaking, a high production value show. I'm not trying to say the audio quality is amazing, but there's a lot of sound effects compared to any other movie review show.
Like, you're never going to be bored. You might find your mind drifting away. Not that you would, but then you hear bazonga and then you're like back in, you know, like
something like that. Yes. At the end of the episode, once we've finished dispersing all of the spoiler radiation, we award the movie a number of quarks. We go over to the flux quark capacitor. That's the name of it.
That's the flux quark capacitor. I would never be able to. I'm not even going
to
try.
Well, it's a reference to Back to the Future. You know, the flux capacitor, but I couldn't remember the actual name. It's the flux quark capacitor, and we look at how many quarks are in there
I couldn't remember the name. Okay, Liv, are you happy? I couldn't remember it. So
it was my fault, Liv. It's a funny, silly idea, Liv. I can never remember the names that I come up with, okay, Liv? This is true. This is actually true. But we will reward a movie a number of quarks. Please go check it out. We have episodes on Moon. We have episodes on Looper, Everything Everywhere All at Once, The Terminator, The Fifth Element, Blade Runner, and more that I'm forgetting. We have two episodes on Everything Everywhere All at Once, one just a review, one with Connie guesting to analyze the movie from a queer and Asian American perspective. We just did the episode with James Mendez Hodes in honor of AAIP month. Just go check it out. It's good stuff. You can follow us wherever pods are cast, or on Twitter at Q Reactor Show, and join our Discord.
Do it. I mean, that was a good I think that was a really good pitch. I think we had a nice little chat about that, and I think that you should go check it out, honestly.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course. You can also find me if you want. I'm at Does Dark Magic on Twitter. I'm Olivia Does Dark Magic everywhere else. I'm over on youtube.com/dicebreaker. There's a lot of fun stuff going on. And we've got a TTRPG show called Story Breakers, which is D&D. So if you do enjoy D&D, it's there. But also, the exciting thing is that we're going to be at MCM at the end of this month, which is May, and we're going to be doing our first live show with Story Breakers. Breakers on the center stage, folks. Wild.
We'll get to watch you break a story in person?
Yeah, right there. Well, bam, it's broken. So everyone does their own thing, but I go up and I'm going to headbutt it. That's my plan. So I'm going to just get on in there. Yeah. So so if you happen to be at MCM, definitely come and say hi, check out the show. And yeah, if you see me, just I'll probably be in my own little world. And you'll be like, Liv, and I'll be like, oh! But I'll be like, oh, hey, you know, so yeah, say hi. It'd be cool.
After the initial rush of adrenaline, yeah. Once you calm down from your shock.
Once I do a backflip out of like a defense like mechanism that's going off in my head and I'm secretly a sleeper agent. Yeah, then I'll be... then I'll be fine. But yeah, and also youtube.com/3blackhalflings is a place you can go video stuff, all sorts of stuff. Yeah, and that's it. Thank you so much for listening/watching, folks. Probably listening. And so long, Shire folk.
So long, Shire folk.
I said Shire folks.
You said Shire folks?
I said Shire folks.
Oh, no. So long, Shire.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.